Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the November 2 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Ellen Dearden from Ag Review in Morton, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online and buy your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference that's coming up the 21st day of November. That's the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving this month. And you can purchase those tickets for just $35. FarmAssetsConference.com, WillAg.org, or during the regular business hours, 800-898-1065. Let's begin with this question, Ellen Dearden. I want to take up not the grains, but the livestock, to begin to discuss where we are headed with the grains. What kinds of herds do we have in the United States? For beef cattle and hogs, and how are the poultry setting in place, and do we have demand that will be able to consume all of the corn crop that has been harvested?
Well, we have demand for red meat products, particularly into the export market right now. I noticed on Thursday morning's export bookings, we had another wonderful week of exports of both beef and pork. And keep in mind that that has to be continue to support these large numbers that are coming at us both on the pork and the cattle side of things. We certainly have had a big upside move, an explosive move in the cattle, but I think that was mostly fund related, not very fundamental. We've also had some upside in the hogs. Poultry numbers are pretty flat, but that, we're certainly moving a lot more corn through beef and pork.
So domestically, we've got good demand for the livestock side. Ethanol on the high end of things, I think. Matt, you tend to watch those numbers. Mr. Bennett, what do you see?
Well, you know, ethanol numbers yesterday is as high as what we've seen in quite some time. You know, we were fairly laggard there for a while here this fall. Which was surprising to me. You know, I thought that maybe we would get ramped up a little bit quicker than what we did. But certainly, I think, using 108.5 million bushels of corn last week just for ethanol is certainly something very impressive. And so, I think that if we continue to churn out those sort of production figures, I think that definitely does nothing to hurt the situation because obviously we've got plenty of corn on hand at this point.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, as you think about that domestic usage and the number of bushels of corn that are being harvested this fall, and some of the numbers that have been coming out as it relates to next week's USDA crop production figure, can we maintain the price of corn at current levels?
Well, it's been amazing that we've been able to. We tried the lows again, last week and couldn't make new ones. We tried it the week before and couldn't. We made the lows, 10 weeks ago, down at that 42, 43. We get down close to it, and we bounce back over 50 like today. We hit 43 earlier in the week, and here we are back at 50.5. So usage is, I think, the secret, that ethanol that we talked about. Our exports aren't as good as we'd like, but we still have good ones. But we do have lots of it lying around, and I think just the idea that we're going to use it is in the minds of people, and that's been helping hold that corn price higher.
And I suppose, Pete, it doesn't hurt that this has been a fairly slow harvest, relatively speaking, and that the pipeline doesn't get really clogged up with all of the corn coming in, though there are plenty of grain piles around.
There's plenty of grain piles, but as you go north, there's lots of corn yet. What are we? Are we 40% still in the field, or how much got harvested to here in all this rainy weather? But there's still lots of it, And some of it's going to be there a while as you go further north. Talking to customers today, further north, their moisture's still 25%.
So it'll take some time to bring some of that corn out. Does this impact the seasonals very much in your mind, Dan Zwicker?
Not at this time. I mean, seasonally, when you have a big crop like we have, the corn market usually will be pretty much of a sideways to maybe even a sideways to slightly lower as you go into December deliveries. So it'll be interesting. You know, probably what's going to happen here is as we get closer to Thanksgiving, December corn is going to break down toward the bottom end of its trading range, and then March corn is going to maybe become the functional lead futures contract toward the upper end of this range that we've been in between, you know, 340 and 360. So if anything, I would say that the big crop tells me that Dease corn might not be able to do anything until we get into expiration, get it off the board, and then March becomes the functional lead. And then that will lead us through the winter time frame.
Ellen Dearden, next week we do have USDA crop production numbers due out. FC Stone and Informa both threw out really big numbers for corn. Do you think that 173 and above will be around?
I don't know whether it will or it won't. Probably doesn't matter a whole lot. The board reacted pretty positively despite those big numbers. I want to go back and make a comment, too, about corn piles and on the demand side of things. I am seeing in the Pekin Peoria area train loads of corn coming into this area from Iowa. It is very typical to see that into the ethanol plants each week, but we're seeing two trains a week rather than one train a week coming into particular plants. The other thing I'm picking up from merchandisers in the St. Louis area is trains of corn coming in from the Western Corn Belt at cheap prices into St. Louis and going down the river from there. That's a little bit out of the ordinary kind of movement that we're seeing, but there's no corn moving. Notice the last 4 weeks we've not seen a shipment of corn out of the Pacific Northwest. So I think we need to keep in mind that the Western Corn Belt movement has got to pick up in order to get this corn price rocking and rolling.
So what do you make of that in bulk? Meaning you talked about the PNW not having shipments, but if corn is coming out of the Western Corn Belt, does that mean that they just have so much corn from previous years and this year both?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Big crop last year and just as big or slightly less this year. Big crop.
And your assessment of what that does to basis in Illinois?
I think it'll probably keep basis rather flat for a long period of time. But the Illinois farmer, or Indiana farmer, is not selling corn at this stage of the game. So these end users, the way to get it is to go into areas that have a lot of stockpiles on the ground.
And then apparently not having to pay up enough to make farmers in Illinois and Indiana to think about opening bin doors.
Right, right. And basis has really stayed pretty flat. We've seen a little pop maybe in the bean basis over the last week's time, but certainly not in the corn.
Matt Bennett, your thoughts on the movement of grain across the Midwest?
Well, I think everything Ellen's saying is about right. I think whenever I look at the basis situation, you know, it really hasn't fell apart, maybe like some thought that it might fall apart. You know, I think, you know, some were calling for some 40 to 50 unders potentially this fall due to how much corn we were carrying in, but haven't really seen that even locally. I think about the worst we've seen during the middle harvest was around 35 under, but I agree with Ellen that it's going to take quite a while to be able to get basis really to get excited whatsoever. I mean, there's got to be some sort of incentive to, you know, to pry this out of the farmer's hands. And I think as long as the corn market stays intact, you're probably not going to see basis do anything, you know, especially if you would end up marching a little bit higher. I don't see any reason why basis wouldn't actually weaken at that point. I know that typically from harvest on, you have a lot of opportunities for basis to strengthen, but I don't think you're going to see any strengthening on basis anytime soon unless you see this market break out of this sideways channel to the downside.
Knowing that, are there ways that producers can take advantage of what you think might be a march higher in the futures price, but not a basis appreciation?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's always a gamble. I mean, if you really feel like basis isn't going to do a whole lot of anything, I mean, who knows? I mean, the problem is if you're going to write a basis contract, if you think that maybe basis will get better, the problem is there's always a cost to that. If you're going to write an HTA, you're not going to get very well taken care of. You know, if the basis ends up falling apart. So I don't know. I guess with a lot of producers, we've been hesitant to get too much commercially stored and get locked into some of those decisions. We've been, you know, trying to store everything we possibly can at home. In those situations, though, we do want to lock the carry in. You know, you got a heck of a carry out to the July. And I think that at some point you're going to get a basis move, but I think that you're looking at least mid-spring to late spring before you see anything that happens of any nature that's worth looking at.
Pete Manhart, what have you been telling your customer base about cash sales for corn?
Well, if you can do it, we're looking at selling it and buying for less, for lots less than storage costs. Buy May calls at the money. Even go out and buy July calls at the money, and you'll have time for this springtime, hopefully, when corn will grind through a lot of this stocks that we have from the big crop. But, you know, you can instead of paying 20 cents till January and another 2.5 to 3.5 a month, you can buy corn calls clear out into May or July that are very, very inexpensive.
Ellen, I know you usually think about this as well.
We're trying to sell this July corn. We're selling July futures. I've not come back and bought calls, but I think the July $4 calls, we can get them down around a dime, and I think they were 12 cents or so on Thursday. That may be something to give you a little courage to get the futures sold. I would prefer to not do an HTA and leave your options open where you're actually gonna take that corn. So I'm doing this on farm stored corn.
Dan Zwicker, we talked a little bit about seasonals for corn with you. Where do we stand technically?
Sideways, and I guess that's what we're building a base. We're trying to figure out a way to either increase our demand, or we're gonna try to discourage the supply side with less acres next year. And I think when you look at what bean prices are doing and what corn prices are doing, it does say that beans are trying to buy additional acres at the expense of corn this coming year. So I think that's probably what's going on, you know, in the marketplace, because we did lose soybean acres in the northern plains, the Dakota areas. They went back to spring wheat because they were able to lock in some $8 type bushel per acre, or $8 wheat. So you're going to see larger spring wheat acres in the Dakotas at the expense of soybeans. So now soybeans, I think, is trying to maintain their acreage base by maybe pulling it away from corn. At least for right now, until we maybe know a little bit more about what's going on in South America.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what this means for producers going into the next season. Matt Bennett, when you look at the soybean to corn ratio, and since 2014, I only know this because I talked to Gary Schnitke, and it's up on the Farm Doc Daily website, that ratio has been 2.74. The long-term ratio from 1972 to the present is 2.55. So 2.74 should buy acres and has. Do producers need to think about a more 50-50 ratio or having more soybean acres for next year, in your opinion?
Well, you know, the ratio is one thing, and I've been kind of charting the ratio, watching it. You know, the new crop ratio isn't running near as rich, of course, as the old crop ratio. whenever you look at it. We're not to 2.74 with the new crop ratio, but we are with the old crop. I think the more important thing, that also stuff that the Farm Doc team has been good to point out, is that, you know, this is the fifth year in a row that the Illinois producer is going to have a higher net profit with the soybean crop than what they are with the corn crop. And so, you know, it's no secret that a lot of producers have been burning equity like it's going out of style the last couple of 3 years. And so, you know, it'd be one thing that if it was a wash, you know, and yeah, beans are cheaper to produce, let's put more beans in the ground. You're also making more money. You know, so you're making more money with the soybeans. First of all, second of all, the cash outlay isn't near as robust. So in my opinion, I think producers need to take a hard, long look, you know, at what really is making them the most money. First of all, what makes the most sense for them and their operations. I've had several producers, more than I've ever heard, contemplating beans on beans this year for 2018. I think part of the reason a lot of these guys and gals, you know, sprayed fungicide and insecticide this past year on their beans, had a heck of a crop, and they're thinking, you know what, I can probably spray this next summer with the beans on beans situation, and maybe I won't have a whole lot of disease problems like people have worried about in the past. And, you know, with the price situation that you're in, it definitely warrants taking a look. Now, I think that a simple 50-50 mix for a lot of my clients is going to be where it's going to be. But I certainly could see more soybean acres, especially if you keep the current ratio or grow it even a little bit.
Yeah, I got a question for the group. I see Central Illinois cash corn prices down in this, you know, $3.10 range, give or take a nickel. How many farmers, or what percentage of farmers with today's yields are making any money with current cash prices?
You know, I definitely could address that. I think, you know, obviously it really depends upon the specific situation, but for your average cash rent situation, if 310 is your price, you better have an awfully, awfully healthy yield if you're going to be printing any black ink in that situation. Now, you know, obviously when we all talk about this, I think everyone's well aware that the producer certainly didn't have a whole lot of corn coming into this, sold going into this crop. And so, you know, absolutely in that situation, if you're a average cash renter, then by all means, this is a stressful situation, you know, whenever you're looking at your corn profit margins at today's cash price.
Well, it seems to me if we're shipping corn in from the West, whether it's coming in from South Dakota or North Dakota or wherever it is, all the way into Peoria, Illinois, then the Dakota farmers have a lower cost of production than the Eastern Corn Belt farmers?
Yeah, I mean, the guys I've worked with, certainly we've seen a lower cost of production. You know, the interesting thing is that they've churned out some yields in the Dakotas in the last couple of years that rival some of the yields we've seen in the I states, you know, and their cash rent for the most part is going to run half to two thirds of what you're going to see in this part of the world. So, you know, and there's definitely a little bit different way of doing things, you know, with some of the producers that you're referencing. When you get into the Dakotas, I mean, a lot of those producers are doing all of their own spraying, all of their own spreading, and certainly their cost of production is definitely lower than what your I-State producer would be.
So one of two things has to happen, I think. Either farmland values in the Western Corn Belt need to go up, and cash rents, or they must come down in the Eastern Corn Belt.
Or get rid of crop insurance. I'm sure everybody loves me.
Maybe.
More profit on beans, more bean plantings.
Well, it's spread the Corn Belt way to the west. I noticed that the state of Kansas now had fewer wheat acres than combined corn and bean acres for 2017. That's crazy. Kansas.
Ohio and Indiana already plant more soybean acres than they do corn acres.
Nebraska.
Well, you got to ask, what's the market asking for?
Yeah, I know. Nebraska cash rents have really ramped up. They're right in line with Illinois now and the eastern part of Nebraska. That's craziness. With their up and down weather, there are a lot of guys that had huge yields this year, but there's guys that had very troublesome yields. And with a $300 cash rent, that can't work on a year-over-year basis.
Well, it just seems to me that the real efficient producer, and I don't know if this 20,000 acre farmer is efficient or what. I don't know if it's the economies of scale or his knowledge in knowing how to produce corn. Is he getting higher bushels per acre than the baby boomer farmer that's just kind of hanging around town farming because he doesn't have anything better to do? Yeah, I mean, are these big guys, have they adapted precision agriculture to the point that they're pumping out 280 bushel corn, and the farmer that hasn't kept up with the technology is still messing around at 225 bushel corn?
I don't know that I would say that that's the case. One thing that I will say, in a year like 2017, you know, where you did have a fair amount of weather stress, is that management came up huge. There's no question about it that your producer, that, you know, whether you want to characterize, you know, by age group or whatnot or size of producer, but the producer that didn't necessarily want to use the elite genetics, didn't want to, you know, use some of the management practices that are available that we weren't using maybe 20 years ago, definitely got hurt. I mean, there's no question in my mind. I think, you know, whenever I look at soybeans, two things jump out to me. Obviously, there were some pretty salty genetics out there this year that we haven't been able to access in the past, first of all. And second of all, planting data on soybeans made a huge difference. And, you know, the U of I has been watching this fairly closely the last couple of years. But when you get those beans planted earlier in the spring and are able to have them flowering whenever we get the most sunlight in the summer, absolutely, you have a better chance at some awfully, awfully good yields. I mean, we saw yields on our farm this year that we never dreamed we'd have just 4 years ago. So, you know, I think management came up awfully big. But no, I don't think it's 280 bushel corn that's making them be able to make more money. I think that obviously the economy is a scale, being able to, you know, in that situation, not have anything custom applied for you, doing it all yourself, being able to spread those costs out and buy everything at wholesale price instead of retail prices, helping those guys out significantly.
How big do they have to be to pull that off?
Well, that's probably a good question for Gary. Because,
I mean, that's not 3,000 acres.
No, it's probably not.
Right.
Or it might be two or three of those guys that size that are deciding to work together. You know, there's a difference between, you know, buying a fertilizer buggy and buying a $400,000 machine. Bottom line is there's certainly some ways that a person can lower their cost of production now quite a bit. It's just we've gotten away from some of those, you know, in some parts of the Midwest here in the last 20, 30 years.
Well, in 4 years of squeeze, things will happen, I suppose, across the Corn Belt, and they already have, to make some changes.
Absolutely.
South American soybeans. What do we see there at this point, Ellen Dearden?
Well, I think the rains the middle part of this week were a bit disappointing for Mato Grosso, but it seems like always 5 days ahead there's a good rain event coming. It appears that the areas that have been super dry will straighten out and get some rains, but in the areas, maybe more importantly, the areas that have been super wet, like the northern part of Argentina and the very southern part of Brazil, are starting to dry out some, and that's probably helpful for this a pickup in planting pace.
Are we worried at all about the size of the South American acreage or their potential crop and its weight on the marketplace, Dan Zwicker?
They're just, I mean, we're just basically waiting around for an adverse weather pattern to take hold someplace to shorten up world supplies. And whether that's going to be South America this year or if it's going to be North America next summer. I don't know, but you know, USDA is going to come in with some bigger numbers here on the November report, and the only way you're really going to get this market to go, I mean, yeah, we can talk about a little bump up in feed usage demand. We can, you know, a little bigger crush and, you know, a little bigger ethanol, but we're not moving the needle at all on demand compared with the supply buildup that we're, that's coming at us. If we don't have a weather problem, you know, and like I said, it, you know, if we're messing around here with $3 cash corn in central Illinois, it's just a matter of time that they're going to increase bean acres to the point that bean acre, that bean prices are going to go back to the $7.50 level too. And see, this is what's happened. This is my big beef about crop insurance is the wheat producers have overproduced to the point so there's no profit in wheat. And so now they've all switched to corn and soybeans, and we're eventually going to get everything down to the point where there's not a profit in anything as long as we overproduce. So it's a matter of time soybeans slip back down to $7.50. If you're at $3 corn, then beans are going to come down to $7.50. And then I don't know what's going to happen to agriculture at that point.
You sure you don't want to come up for the Farm Assets Conference and sit on the policy?
Now, everybody knows my house. I'm an old
Better find a side door for him.
Back in the day, they wanted government out of agriculture. Nowadays, everybody wants government in agriculture. So, you know, farm policy is a total disaster. You know, it's meant to help the family farm, and I don't even know who the family farmer is anymore. But all of these government programs have accelerated the larger farms. The larger farms are getting bigger, and there's more and more of them, and that trend is going to continue as long as you've got incentives in farm policy to overproduce. Boy, everybody went dead on that one.
We're still going to plant what makes us the most money. We're going to gradually plant more of that. And then when we get to the place where it drives that price down, then it might turn the other way. But, you know, 930, 950 beans versus 750, you won't see it back then. But the overproduction is the big problem.
Right. So I'm thinking about this as it relates to crop insurance for just a bit. And so if you start with the idea that it's actuarially, you have to have everybody in for it to work. So that it's actuarially sound, no matter what you think about how it moves, it's actuarially sound. So that should be, that shouldn't change the marketplace at all. And China is the driver on the economic front. If agriculture is our primary export out of the United States, and it is, clearly by the numbers, so you have to have the free trade in order to pull that off. And I think that's where the bigger problem may lay in the future if things are protectionistic. But farmers, on the flip side, farmers are very active politically, and the current administration will react to that generally.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need a weaker dollar, and low interest rates don't seem to be doing it. Maybe at some point in time, inflation will take off and the dollar will weaken. I don't know, but the dollar still stays relatively strong. If we want to be real competitive in the export market, I mean, that's the problems that I saw that we had in the 80s and 90s is that U.S. was basically became the residual supplier because it was always somebody would always undersell us in the market. So the only time they came to the U.S. was when the other parts of the world were on low inventory. And of course, the big boom in prices that we had in the double O's has brought more land into production, not only here in the United States, but around the world. And now we're paying the price for it 10 years later.
Well, 10 year. Well, we bring land in and out of production. The 10 year, 10 years. If you look at a rolling 10 years, we bring land in and out of the production fairly often. In total for cropland, it changes the mix. So there are more corn and soybean acres, for instance, this year than there have ever been in total combined in the past ever. But the largest corn crop ever planted was in the 1930s, 100 million plus acres of some sort. So that changes fairly often.
Yeah.
Well, we probably won't be able to solve it, so we should talk more.
You're solving it at the Farm Assets Conference.
Well, maybe so. Mm-hmm. We'll see. You know what's most fun about that is if we can get the crowd talking, and usually that happens. These conversations are pretty good, especially at conferences like that when you have enough mics and people are willing to stand up, and because farmers are involved in politics and USDA and trade every day, more than anybody else in the United States that I know about, as an active citizen taking part in what happens across the whole of the nation. So I think it's very important for them to come and stand up and voice how they feel. And if things are going right for the Farm Assets Conference, we should have some staffers there from Washington, D.C., as they think about writing the next farm bill and certainly consider what's happening with trade and, you know, if they hear what's happening on the farm and from producers directly, that has a really large impact. So hopefully people will come in for the conference. Your thoughts, each of you, and I think Pete Manhart, I'll start with you, on marketing of soybeans. Did producers put away soybeans commercially or in the bin that they'll need to sell later? They usually do, but because they have more of them, I suppose, than they expected, and maybe more by acres, too. What should they be considering at this time?
Well, the price, you know, the price, they planted more beans, or we did, because of the price and because of the acre profit potential versus corn. And should they be selling them? Again, that's a individual thing. How many sold beans ahead of time that didn't sell any corn? Should I be storing them? What's the price going to be down the road? Will we go back down in price after people say, oh, we're going to plant more beans due to higher prices in the beans or more profit in the beans? I think you have all of those things to consider in your individual case of, do I get rid of them now? Have I already got rid of them? Should I replace them? All those things come into be a factor of where am I at with my situation.
Ellen Dern, your thoughts?
You've got good carry in the cash market to go to Dece Jan to move beans in that slot. Commercial storage is 18 cents minimum to the first of the year. I think you've got a good chance to recoup 18 cents in beans more so than you do in corn. So I'm even willing to sell to store some commercially.
Matt Bennett?
Actually, I pretty much agree with what Ellen just said. I would be more willing to store beans than corn. I kind of feel like any sort of a little hiccup, whether we're talking weather in South America or, you know, maybe some unexpected export sales, in my opinion, are going to be met with a fair amount of enthusiasm. And I feel like that's what we've seen. This bean market has had plenty of reasons to go down, just really hasn't. So, yeah, I would probably be a little more willing to sit on the beans than what I would corn.
And Dan Zwicker.
I think, you know, you have to manage your cash flow. Make sure you got that covered as you go through the next 3-4 months. But other than that, you got to play the seasonals, and the seasonals should strengthen as we go on into the early part of the new growing season. So even though corn has been flat and sideways, actually that's a good chart pattern to build off of and to break out of at some point in time. I don't know when that's going to happen, but I'm hopeful that it'll happen sometime next year, that we can break to the upside, and if we get a good rally going in corn. So I guess corn at $3 a bushel, I would be more apt to probably hang on to corn and see what happens as we go down the road, as long as we stay in this sideways pattern, and probably use the beans to manage my cash flow, but still retain some form of ownership in case South America gets into trouble.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always listen to the whole of our program and buy your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference on our website at willag.org. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, including Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Ellen Dearden from Ag Review in Morton, Illinois, and Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.